This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Labor trafficking is the use of intimidation, threats, and sometimes violence to force people to work against their will. The national nonprofit Polaris Project and others working to prevent trafficking say certain populations are especially vulnerable, such as immigrants. They may be working legally in the U.S., but their legal status is tied to a particular employer. On Saturday, the Leadership Academy of the Maryland State Bar Association will host a workshop in Baltimore for both attorneys and the general public to learn more about labor trafficking. Sheena Wadhawan will be one of the speakers. She's the legal program manager for CASA de Maryland, and she joins us on the line from her office in Hyattsville. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
What is labor trafficking exactly?
So, you know, when people talk about human trafficking, they often think about sex slaves, right? Trafficking and prostitution. But in fact, the more common type of trafficking is labor trafficking. And what we were talking about when we talk about trafficking are workers forced to work under coercion, some sort of threat, and usually quite underpaid.
And so sex trafficking and labor trafficking are both forms of human trafficking.
That's correct.
How big a problem is labor trafficking in Maryland?
Labor trafficking is very widespread all throughout this country and around the world. We see a lot of cases of trafficking in Maryland, in particular because Maryland is so close to Washington, D.C., we have a lot of diplomats and other folks who have special access to bringing in workers from other countries, special visas. And so we see a lot of widespread abuse against those domestic workers in particular.
Walk me through that.
So here's what happens. A diplomat comes from another country, and they will usually have had some relationship with the worker before. For example, the worker worked for them in their home country. And they'll say, you know, you do great work for me. Come with me to my, you know, come with me to the U.S. We'll treat you very well. Here's a written contract that says you'll work 40 hours a week for X dollars an hour, which is always minimum wage or over, and we'll treat you well. We'll give you health insurance, et cetera, et cetera. And these contracts are required. The State Department wants to see those contracts before they'll provide that worker with a visa. So the worker agrees, gets here, and then almost immediately the employer will completely change the terms, right? So the contract won't be honored. Their passports, documents will often be taken away and held by the employer, and the employer will force the worker to work much more than what was agreed upon. And if they get paid at all, they will be paid much less than the minimum wage and the agreed upon wage rate. And then those abuses can get worse. So from there, you can end up with workers who aren't allowed to leave the house, who are locked up, who are abused in other ways.
Does it follow from that most trafficked workers are immigrants, not U.S. citizens?
In the cases that we see, and we are an immigrants' rights organization, they are mostly immigrants. I think we've got to be really conscious of the fact that in this country, there are many sectors in which most of the workers are immigrants. In home care, domestic workers are a great example of a workforce which is largely immigrant women. So when we talk about these sorts of widespread abuses, you're talking about really disproportionately impacting low-wage immigrants, and in particularly in the context of domestic workers, women.
You talked about so many of these cases being the workers being hidden in the shadows. How do victims come forward? How is it usually on their own that they come forward, or how are they found?
No. So for a worker to come forward, there usually is some sort of catalyzing event. So something very terrible that happened. So for example, in many of my cases, it's because the worker's been physically assaulted to the point where they fear for their lives. And it's at that point that they will run and get out. We have organizers, domestic worker organizers, who go out into the community and try to meet workers where they are. So, for example, midday at parks and things like that, where kids may be, where the workers may be with the children that they're taking care of. So it does take a lot of on-the-ground and active outreach or a catalyzing event or, someone's actually found really hurt somewhere, right? And then the police are called, and then they will reach out to organizations like ours to make a rescue.
When a complaint of trafficking comes to you, what do you do?
Well, the first thing we do is we figure out how to get the person out of the situation if they're not already there. So we have we create a nice strategy for getting the person out, and that usually involves, we have this beautiful active committee of domestic workers, and they are former abused workers who are survivors and have really become empowered, outspoken advocates for other workers. And so this big group of wonderful women will go out there and be support and help encourage that worker to leave that situation, and then our legal team will be back up, our organizers are on the ground, and if it's a very dangerous situation, we may use some sort of law enforcement standby. So we get the worker out, and then we talk to them, we figure out what's going on, what happened, and then we can attack it on many levels, right? So one is getting their unpaid wages. Usually these are folks who are owed thousands of dollars in unpaid wages, so that's a civil part of the case. The other part of the case is potential criminal action, right? Potential criminal reporting and criminal prosecution for trafficking. And the third is dealing with their immigration status. So one of the biggest problems in this context is that people's visas, their status in this country are attached to that employer. So the employer is really able to hold that over their head. And as soon as the employer fires them, those workers go out of status. And so that's the other piece that we will usually work on, and we'll explore a special kind of visa for victims of trafficking or victims of certain qualifying crimes.
Well, many of us see workers every day who aren't originally from this country. Are there any signs we should look for whether that person is being trafficked?
Absolutely. Every single one of us, when we are walking down our street, walking in our neighborhood, can take that step of just saying hello, smiling, giving someone a chance to maybe reach out to you for help. We see this in all sorts of industries. It may be someone working in the liquor store. It may be someone butchering your meat. And it may be a woman, you know, walking down the street with a stroller. It is something that each and every one of us can do. You know, one of many of the workers who come to us are so thin from not being fed in the homes where they are. So that's one sign. Or you may see workers crying. You may see workers that just look very harried. And in all of those situations, sometimes it's just a single act of kindness that can open the door and give that person the feeling of comfort and safety in order to come forward and say, help me, I need help.
I really appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheena Wadhawan is Legal Program Manager for Casa de Maryland. This is Maryland Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Last week, the United Nations criticized the United States' human rights record on several grounds, including not doing enough to prevent labor trafficking. The UN Human Rights Committee said it's concerned, quote, about the insufficient identification and investigation of cases of trafficking for labor purposes, and notes with concern that certain categories of workers, such as farm workers and domestic workers, are explicitly excluded from the protection of labor laws, thus rendering those categories of workers more vulnerable to trafficking, close quote. We reached Nathaniel Norton, the supervising attorney for Maryland Legal Aid, who does outreach to farm workers, and asked what he's seen.
What we see pretty regularly is what looks like trafficking to us, where people are so economically dependent on their employers that they're willing to accept really severely substandard conditions, accept not being paid properly, not being given all the work they're promised, not being given access to the outside world, access to health care, because they're afraid of losing their jobs.
Give me an example of a case that you saw.
Well, I guess what's fairly typical is people on the Eastern Shore simply not getting paid what they're promised. And if they complain about it, they're fired immediately. If they're lucky, the employer will just immediately put them on a bus back to Florida. Sometimes the employer will just abandon them here in Maryland or Delaware and not pay them, leave them with no money, and essentially homeless on the Eastern Shore. That happens several times every summer.
So what can be done to prevent the kind of situations you're describing, where workers are taken advantage of and don't feel that they have any recourse?
Well, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, they have much less recourse than a regular worker in the United States. Farm workers are routinely exempted from protections under federal and state laws that generally protect workers. They're exempt from overtime protections fully under federal law and only get overtime after 60 hours in Maryland. Under state law, they're often exempt from minimum wage. They're exempt from protections of the National Labor Relations Act, so they can be fired for attempting to improve their working conditions. And so that creates a situation where there's not a whole lot of enforcement, there's not a lot of investigation, and there's where the law does protect farm workers, there's still not a lot of investigation by state and federal officials. They don't do much outreach to camps. I'm not sure the state does any. The state doesn't do any pre-occupancy inspections of migrant labor camps at all in Maryland, except for guest workers, but none for domestic workers. So there's just a culture of treating farm workers discriminatorily under the law, and it kind of creates a plantation mentality among employers and the workers themselves, I think.
I appreciate you telling us about this situation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nathaniel Norton. He's supervising attorney for Maryland Legal Aid, and he does outreach to farm workers in Maryland. If you see signs of trafficking, you can call the Polaris hotline, the Polaris Project hotline at 888-373-7888. Again, that's 888-373-7888. We've got the number on our website, too. The workshop we mentioned about labor trafficking this Saturday will take place at Patterson High School in East Baltimore near Hopkins Bayview. It's hosted by the Maryland State Bar Association Leadership Academy. The morning session at 9 is aimed at lawyers. The afternoon session from 1 to 3 p.m. is for the general public. Latinos needing assistance are welcome. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass. Just ahead, here comes the sun. Stay with us on 88.1.